英語でいいです
か。いいですいいです、名前で日本語でもいいですよ。
名前、
私の名前は山岡芽衣です。
で、あの、今どこに住んでおられます？
今はアメリカのエルサリートっていうところに住んでいます。
Maybe can you repeat that in English?
My name is Mei Yamaoka, and I live in El Cerrito, California, USA.
Okay. Okay. And that's close to San Francisco?
It's across the bay from San Francisco, on the East Bay side.
And how many years have you lived here?
We lived in El Cerrito since 1961, so it's been 48 years.
That's a long time.
Long time. It's been a long time, yes.
Yes. Should we start from how many daughters and granddaughters do you have?
I have two daughters and a son, and I have four granddaughters, all daughters.
Oh my God. Wow. So four granddaughters.
Four granddaughters, uh-huh.
And you go to the, he said you go to the annual trips.
Well, we try to do family trips every year. Mm-hmm. But it's getting harder and harder as I get older.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what's the most recent trip you've done?
The recent trip we took was in last year. Mm-hmm. In August, we went to on Alaska trip. Alaska cruise, actually, on the Princess Sapphire.
Princess Sapphire. Uh-huh. What's that? That's a
fairly new ship.
Cruise ship.
Wow. It was very nice. We went from Vancouver, went up all the way up to Whittier, which is the port for Anchorage. And from Anchorage, we went into Denali Park, National Park, on the train and came back by bus to Anchorage, and then we flew out.
So it was with the airplane? From the Whittier to Denali Park?
No, it was on a train. The train. Local train. Uh-huh. Took 10 hours.
And the ship was waiting for you.
Well, the ship dropped us off in Whittier. And then we took a bus to, actually, we walked to the train. Because the train was right there. And then it's a narrow train. And I guess the reason it took a long time is because they have to stop and let the other side come by on some other directions, the opposite direction. But it took 10 hours, and it was quite a nice trip. And we went into Denali National Park and stayed at the Princess Lodge. Mm-hmm. And there are wild animals and so forth. So we had an interesting trip.
Wow. That's amazing. Uh-huh. And I've never been there. What was your impression of Alaska?
It's a beautiful scenic area.
People are nice people. Some people look like a little Asian feature.
Well, some do, the natives, I think, but we didn't see too many of them. Mm-hmm. Some of them, because we went tourist places, it's not like we didn't go into the local areas, so... But it was quite interesting. It was quite interesting.
What was the highlight?
Well, the highlight, I think, was we took the excursion to see the whales. Uh-huh. And we saw the whales breaching, you know. We saw the eagles. And it was quite, and then, of course, the glaciers. We stopped and looked at the glaciers, and it's beautiful and very interesting.
Wow, so, that's nice. So you were born in the in Japan?
I was born in Lodi, California, in 1929, May 1st. That's why my name is May.
I see. So it's actually English May.
May. Well, my father made it so that my name is in English May, but he also converted into Japanese May, which is Akarui Akira. So in school in Japan, they would call me Tamura Akira, and I won't answer them until they say May.
Well, that's very rare.
Yes.
Reading. And then you were born in Lodi,
California.
Because your parents?
My parents were there, of course. Uh-huh.
What was their story? How did they come?
Well, I don't really know, but my father immigrated when he was quite young, and he told me that he did work in Alaska mm-hmm. on the fishing boats, and he also worked on the railroads. Mm-hmm. And then I guess when he saved enough money, he came to Lodi, and he might have worked on the farms, I'm not sure, mm-hmm. but he bought property, and by the time that I came along, we had a boarding house, mm-hmm. and he had a property where he rented out the front part mm-hmm. For the grocery store. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So that's what I remember.
What time did they come again? Huh? When did they come to the U.S.?
See, I don't know exactly, because I was born in 29. My older sister is 26, 19. My older brother was 1923, and they had another child that we never knew, so about 1920. So he must have been early 1900s.
We're also documenting how we're doing this journey mm-hmm. from Vancouver mm-hmm. to San Diego, mm-hmm. visiting all the hip hop. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we're also trying to document how we are documenting, because I think it's important to for young people in Japan to know uh-huh. how young people like us are uh-huh. trying uh-huh. to understand yeah. some things about the past. But it's not easy.
And I know.
Because history is difficult. Yeah. But anyway, so you were. Okay. Yes, this looks very, very beautiful interview.
Yeah.
It's one of the most beautiful interviews I've ever done. So you were born in Italy.
Yeah. And I was 9 years old when my parents decided to go to Japan, because he wanted us to get Japanese education and to learn the culture so that we could understand them better. Because he said that it was harder for them to do the English side for themselves, but he thought that perhaps we would go to Japan and learn the Japanese culture, the traditions, and so forth. So that's when he decided to take the whole family back to Japan. But he told us that we won't like Japan, to live in Japan, because of the inconvenience. I mean, didn't have the modern convenience like we had here, which I didn't know at that time because I was only 9 years old. So we did go to Japan. He said that we won't like it in Japan, but he will leave the property in Lodi so we could come back when we got older. And he had a younger brother at that time who was married and lived there, so he not left the property to him, but he left the business for him to run. So we left for Japan.
The whole family?
The whole family, 7 of us. And sure enough, we were not very happy at first, because we went to a place called Jigozen, mm-hmm. which is near Miyajima. And it was 1938, so they didn't have any running water, no flushing toilets. And so when my father brought home, he unpacked a toilet seat from the States, and he said, "What are you doing with a toilet seat?" He said, "Well, you'll know when we get to Japan." Sure enough, because the Japanese toilets were so different from what we have here. So we were happy that he did take the toilet seat to Japan, even if we didn't have the flushes.
Well, that's a big difference. Uh-huh. But you spoke fluent English.
At that time, I was 9, and then my sister and my brother, we were all there, so we spoke English at home. So I didn't really forget how to speak English, although my vocabulary was only a 9-year-old when I came back. And I was 18 when I came back, so my vocabulary was very limited.
So it was 19... Which year did you go back to Japan?
November 1938.
And what was your first impression when you arrived in Japan?
Well, when we first went, we went on the Chichibu Maru. And it was about 16 days on the water, but... Sadly, well, just before we got to Honolulu, my mother got a telegram saying that her mother had died. And she was an invalid for 9 years, so my mother was hoping to get there in time. But we stopped in Honolulu, and her brother lived in Hilo, has a very successful supermarket there. And anyway, he came to meet us in Honolulu. And we talked with them, and I remember that. And then after we went to Yokohama, we didn't think there was anything too different because it was more of a modern city. And we went, and my father, since we had to go back to Jigozen because of my grandmother's death, that we didn't stay too long, but he wanted us to see Tokyo at least. So he hired a couple of cars, limousine or whatever, and then we took a tour of Tokyo. And I remember going to Mitsukoshi department store and having lunch upstairs at the Shokudogai. And then we were at I forgot what the ryokan's name was, Joshuya or something like that in Yokohama. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I walked around. And we came to a bakery, and they had these beautiful pastries. He said, well, let's buy it. And the lady said, nanasen. So we said, what's nanasen? So then we had this book that we picked up on the ship, and it said nanasen, 7 cents. So I said, oh, that's cheap enough. So we bought it. Because we only knew about, if she had said shichisen, we would have known. But nanasen, we didn't know what it was.
It was very cheap for you.
Well, because
the dollar was
so strong, not now, but even in my child's thinking, you know, it was sort of. So we bought that, and then we took the train to Hiroshima and then eventually to the village. And the first thing that I noticed was my father said, the light bulb. I said, there's only one light bulb that you have to take from one room to the other. At a certain time, it went on. So then he had to, I guess they paid only a certain amount a month, but my father had it arranged so that he paid, had a meter put in, and he put lights in the different rooms. And then also, we didn't have any running water, suidone, so that... we had to use the well water, and I was getting very good at doing this with a bucket. But he also arranged to have a water piped in, mm-hmm. motorized, we didn't have to bucket the take the water to the bathtub and the kitchen. So he had that all made up. So eventually he worked it out so that we had some convenience.
I just see a Ziploc there. Excuse me. Can I take this Ziploc off?
Oh, please.
Are you okay?
No, you I'm fine.
Can you
could take that doll away. I made that doll.
Oh, you made
it. It's a kimekomi doll. Oops.
It's okay.
Is it okay?
Can you make sure that it's standing up? So that's
nice. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. You're going to cut out a lot of things,
sure,
aren't you?
Sure.
So, there's some things that probably...
Mm-hmm. So, okay, perfect. So, just checking. So it was pretty convenient.
Well, my father made it so that was convenient. Being 9 years old, I mean, I adapted quite mm-hmm. well. We had to learn better Japanese, but so I was put in the second grade, and then I was promoted to third, and then to the fourth right away. Mm-hmm. And then,
and then you were able to feel like it was your country, or you still felt like a foreigner there?
I didn't feel so much as a foreigner, but I guess we acted a little differently from the Japanese people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But
people
eventually I made lots of friends uh-huh. and neighbor friends, and then we used to go. Actually, the first I guess it must have been the first year or so. I had tutors. We had tutors, so we used to go after school to get tutored in Japanese and sakubun type of thing.
Uh-huh. So you picked up quite quickly.
Yeah, I did, because when we finished fourth grade, they gave me a shinposho. So I did pretty well.
Okay. Let's talk about how was it like? Did they pick on you or anything like that?
Well, I was pretty fat, so they used to laugh at me.
Oh, because they're small.
The Japanese people were thin, uh-huh. small, so I was pretty big. But it was okay. I mean, when we're children, you know, after a while, it was fine. We became good friends, and we used to go on hikes and climb the mountains, the Kannonsan and all that. I got used to it, and Jigozen is right on the Seto Naikai, so we used to go swimming every summer. So it was very nice.
Can you go also behind her just for a little bit? Let's shoot her behind with her head. Sorry. We'll just talk about something a little silly because he's in the. But so this is. I want to keep going because this is interesting. Uh-huh. You know, to see like what the Japan was like from the.
Well, of course, the one difference too was we had to walk to school. In America, my father used to take us back and forth on the car, so it took us a long time to get used to walking. And I don't know, it must have taken 20 minutes, 30 minutes, I don't know, it was pretty far, because we were at one end of the village and the school was at the other end of the village. But after a while, you get used to walking. Mm-hmm. And then we had to walk in front of the cemetery, because my house wasn't right in front of the cemetery, or the cemetery was not right in front, but mm-hmm. just along the road, there was a curb, and the cemetery was right there. So when we went to the tutors, we used to say, oh, it's scary. And my father always used to say, you shouldn't be scared because Ohaka is the most niggiyakana place. Uh-huh. And so after that, we felt fine.
So it was you and your sister? Or?
My oldest brother, my older sister, and I, and my younger sister who died in the bomb, and my youngest brother. So there were five of us.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're back to the normal.
So it's the. So it was like nobody picked on you or anything like.
I don't remember it too well about being picked on. Uh-huh. I'm sure there are times that they used to laugh at me from the back, but. But when the war started, they really started saying, you know, tiki, tiki, tiki.
How? Tiki, tiki, come on.
Like yeah, you know, like enemy.
Enemy.
You people are. But we didn't even know about the war because we didn't put the radio on until I went to school. And my father, afterwards, we found out when the Japan bombed Pearl Harbor. Yeah.
Well, do you remember that day? What was it like?
Well, 12月の6日 in Japan is Taisho Hotaibi.
What was it like?
Well, we didn't know. I didn't believe it when my friends told me that, you know, you're our enemy.
And then you went back home?
Mm-hmm. Well, we went to school. I mean, we were going to school, and I said I didn't believe it. And until later on, of course, we heard about it. And by that time, my oldest brother had come back on the latest ship. Ray didn't like Japan. He went to Sanyo Chugaku. He didn't like the school. He didn't like Japan. So he came back to Lodi. But that was another... My father, he was a very wise man. And he always used to say, kawaii koni wa tabi o sase. So when one night, well, it must have been in, I don't know, the latest ship must have come back, maybe, what was it, October, November or something. I can't remember the month, 1941. But a man came in the evening and said, oh, your son booked a passage back to Japan, to the States, and I came to collect the passage bill, the fee. So my father then, we didn't know anything about it. And he turned around and asked my brother, said, do you want to go back? And he says, yes. I said, okay. So he paid the man and my brother came back. So, of course, all during the war, my father was very worried about him because we didn't know what had happened to him because there's no communications during the war.
Did you like Japan?
Well, I got used to living in Japan, let's put it that way, but I always thought I'd come back because, I don't know, Japan was fine. You know, when you're young, you adapt. Then I had friends and went to school. But I think in back of my mind, I always wanted to come back to the United States. I think it's the living, you still remember the modern and the convenient living and the freedom that we have over here makes a lot of difference.
But Lodi was not a big city.
No, it's a town. It's a farming town. Grapes.
So it's very different from like Hiroshima.
See, Hiroshima, only time that I went to Hiroshima was in Jogakko and during the war, so I really didn't know too much about Hiroshima. We just went straight to school and came back and study. And
you lived outside of Hiroshima.
Yeah, we took the streetcar. It used to be the second station from Miyajimaguchi, mm-hmm. And we used to go to Koi. And then from Koi, we took the city bus the streetcar, I should say, to the school. And my school was in Ajina by the port because I went to Daini Kenjo, and it was in the Josen compound. So we were in the same school, actually, compound as the Josen people. And I was a second class. Actually, it's a brand new school, so I was a second one. The first year people, I have a real good friend who was a senpai from the same village. She went to Daini Kenjo. And so she was the first group of students that went there. And then my class was the second group. And it was a brand new school, so it didn't last too long because after the war it sort of dismantled, and I think there were only about five different years. Then after the war it dismantled. Uh-huh. It was a small school. They only accepted 100 students, so there were only two classes of 50, so I was very happy to be accepted because there were 400 people in taking the tests. So we were
smart.
I don't know whether I was smart or not, but I was accepted.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So you learned a fair bit of Japanese to be accepted.
Yeah, yes. Uh-huh.
To a difficult school.
I didn't have much problem studying. I had pretty good grades. But after I came back, gee, it's been over 60 years, so... And when I met my husband, he says, don't speak Japanese because of the discrimination, because it's right after the war. And he says, people won't like it if you speak Japanese. So many of the Niseis then speak Japanese outside of the house. And that's why the children really don't know too much or speak Japanese, because we spoke English. I try to speak Japanese to the kids, but my husband said, don't speak Japanese. Because he was sent to camp, so he knew all about discrimination. So.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's coming from this side. Sorry.
Is it okay?
Yes, but we want the best pictures, so just a little adjustment. Are you hot?
No, I'm not hot, but it's, I guess I get nervous.
Okay. Can you look this way, please? ちょっと暗めの方がいいかな。 Okay, so now we're finally getting close to the war. So you got into the school, and then mm-hmm. So remember anything when the war started, and do you remember any, do you have any memories of some specific...
Well, I was in sixth grade when the war started. So the following year, I went to Jogakko. So the war started in December. And, of course, we went to Jogakko in April. I think in Japan we have a promotion in April, so that's when I started. So it wasn't too bad in between, but I did hear some of my brother's friends who were older in college or something, they had to report the Kenpeitai or something like that once a month. But I don't know because I never heard from that person. I just heard about it. So I guess they were keeping track of all the, especially the boys, the older boys.
That was from U.S.?
From the States, living in Japan. Uh-huh.
But they never did anything?
I don't think so, not that I know of. Uh-huh. That I don't know. That's the only thing I heard about, that they did keep track of the American citizens living in Japan, the older ones, especially college age. Or graduated people.
Huh? They just had to report to the
company. And report once a month or something like that. Okay. But I don't know for sure.
And then did you have to go to the siren?
You mean air raid shelter? We used to do that, huh? Once in a while. Hiroshima didn't have too many of it compared to other cities. But, of course, I guess I was in third grade, they were having the students, high school, chugakko and jogakko students have kindo hoshi. And our school, our principal was sort of, he revolted and said that he didn't want his students to go work. So anyway, I guess he wasn't very well liked, but he managed that we didn't go until our fourth year. So we didn't go to Kindo Hoshi until our fourth year, and he made it so that we went to school once a week. And that was unusual during the war, because I don't know how he managed that, but we did go to work, and we did go to school once a week during the Kendo Hoshi time. And of course, August 6th, the air raid siren went on, and we all went to the shelter, and then the all clear came. Then after we took our position, we were working at a place called Senbaikyoku, which is a tobacco factory. So I was manning a cigarette machine. When the roll, it came, start rolling out, we used to put it in the boxes. And that's where I was standing when the, what you call the picadon, when it happened. And nobody knew what it, but we all knew something had happened. I mean, we didn't know what kind of bomb, but we all hit the floor because that's what we were trained for. And we had to cover our ear, nose, and mouth, and eyes. And like, I guess we had to do it like this, and on the
can
ground.
Can you do it again? Like
the- we had to do everything closed. Eyes and mouth and the nose and the ears and go flat on the floor so that, I guess, to protect us.
Wow, because the, why was this?
Oh, well, because of anytime there's a bombing, a lot of things fly around, so they didn't want us to get it in the dust, get in the eyes or the nose or the mouth and everything. And although we had our, I guess, I don't know if you knew this or not, but we used to have this padded bonnet. Do you have you seen it? We used to have to have a bonnet that was padded, and we used to wear it. And we had to wear Monpei during the war because... Oh, is that what it is? Anyway, it's padded, thick. So, but we didn't have time to put that on even. But and then... What had happened was the Senbaikyoku is a building, ticking building, concrete building. So it stood, the outside was standing, but the inside walls were all knocked down and all the dust was flying around. So we didn't know what it was, but when it, the dust cleared, we, of course, walked outside. And luckily, I think everybody was saved except, I think, one. I heard one lady, not a student, but one lady died from machinery falling on her. And the people who were working alongside the windows, they were all burnt on the side because of the light. Because whenever, I guess you heard about it, that people with even umbrellas and under the shade were, they get these... marks, I think, or the people who had white cuffs. The cuffs, the only thing that remained in other places were burnt. So the white reflected the light. And it was really weird when you hear about it, but it's true. So whenever there's a next war, everybody has to wear white. But we went outside and we heard later on that one girl used to commute from far away, and she had special permission to come late, and she was Yukue Fume, because I guess she was en route from her house, and she never made it to work. So if she had come to work, she would have been all right. So we lost one classmate that day, and... then, of course, we lost a lot of the younger ones because they were outside doing Kendo Hoshi. But the first grade and the second graders, many of the students were killed or badly burned. Like my sister, she was first year school. She went to Furitsuno School called Yamanaka. And they were outside clearing the debris that the soldiers were knocking down some of the buildings to for sokai no tame, you know, the evacuation. So they were all outside. So almost everybody died. Those young. So there's not too many students who are 3 years younger or maybe 6 years younger, 3 years younger from that area. era, I should say.
How old were you at the time?
I was 16, and my sister was 13. So, but my good friend that I was sitting by the river, right, there's a, you know, Hiroshima is a delta city, so there's so many rivers. There's 7 rivers, I think. So her sister went to the same school as my sister. So she said, well, let's go and see if we could find them. Of course, we couldn't get past the soldiers or the policemen or the farm, and we couldn't get inside the city. So we had to wait it out. And we waited until low tide and walked across the edge of the city all the way to Koi. And we thought maybe we could catch a streetcar, not knowing what's happening. But by the time we got there, all the people were, the injured people, burnt people were getting on the streetcars or the trucks or any transportation that we said, well, we can't take their place. So we walked home. Actually, we walked home to Itsukaichi, where she lived. And then I walked a little bit more. My leg was swelling. And I walked to a place called Rakuraku-en, which is next city from Itsukaichi. And I went to my father's friend's place, Mr. Kaya, and he took me home on the back of his bicycle. So by the time I got home, of course, my parents were so worried because they saw the picadong and the mushroom cloud from where they were.
That's far away.
And they heard the boom. I mean, we didn't hear the boom because we're too close. We just saw the light. And
how close were you?
About 1.5 kilometers, not quite 2 kilometers from the center. And but my sister did come back. So then when I got home, I noticed, like, I have a big cut right here. And my bone was showing, but it didn't hurt. I guess it was so traumatized. But so when I went to we had a woman doctor in our village. So I went to her, and she was already taking care of all the survivors who had evacuated to our grammar school. And by the time I got there, she said, I only have this much thread and only mercurochrome, the red medicine. So she only gave me one stitch right in the middle. She said normally there would be about 6 or 7 stitches, but she only saw. And then I noticed there were some cuts on my back, but nothing really serious. And the next day, my father and I went to look for my sister. It took us 3 days to find her, but we did find her. We went to the city first, and the second day we went to the outer islands because we heard some people were taken to the hospital on the outer islands, like Etajima or someplace. Like, they had a naval station there, and then we could find her. Then one of our village friends, actually, he said he saw our sister, and she was asking for water. But instead of asking the soldier to set her aside, he just left her there, so we didn't know where she was. And I guess we can't blame him. I guess he was looking for his son, you know. So anyway, he told us she was by the pool, by Ichu, at the Daiichi Chugakko, Kenditsu Chugakko. So that's where we went the third day. And luckily, she was on top of the pile of all the bodies. I mean, it was just uncanny that we were able to find her. It was really sad. Because the reason we found her is because she had an American-made slip-on that we recognized. And then she had a great big cut. I mean, her arm was almost severed, which, of course, she was all swollen. But my father arranged it, and it was good that she was on the top instead of underneath, because we would never have found her. and the soldiers were ready to bury all the people. And so my father arranged to have her brought home. So we had a proper funeral for her. It was very sad.
You were 16.
I was 16 and she was 13.
And you, that was not, because you would expect she was alive still.
Well, we were hoping because a man said that she was asking for water. And so we thought maybe she would still be alive. But
it was on top of the
top of mound of bodies, you know, or the corpse. Yeah, because the soldiers were ready to bury them because the body would be rotting if they stayed out. It was really hot in those days because it's August. And there, everything was really hot.
So your father pointed her out first? Hmm? Your father found her first?
Yeah, we found her right there by the pool. Yeah, where he said he saw her. But it's just lucky that she was right on. I mean, we were lucky that she was right on top. Yeah, it just, we felt, I mean, we were sad to lose her, but we were lucky we gave her a proper funeral because a lot of people never even found their family members. But it was sort of sad. So we brought her home and had a funeral for her.
In your hometown?
My father arranged with, I guess he hired a truck to come bring her home. I mean, I don't know I can't even remember whether it was a regular truck or a funeral home truck, but he arranged it so that we brought
her. And you also went with the car?
We asked the soldier to please, remove her from the top. It's sort of a blur, actually, for me. It's hard for me to even remember each detail, but.
Yeah. But you just remember certain.
Bits
and pieces.
Yeah.
And then it's the so you had a. You clean her body and then did a whole.
It was whole. But they were all swollen. It was all swollen. Because, burn victims get all swelled up.
So it was just.
The face and everything was swollen.
And burned, charred?
I think it must have been burned, but she had a. Like I said, it was almost cut off one side of the arm.
So you still remember about her? Where is she buried?
Well, we brought her home, and we had our own cemetery, so that's where she was interred. But my mother, I don't think she ever put her in the grave, because my mother wanted her at the Obusudan, so the high. The Obutsudan there. But I think she did have part of her in the Oaxaca. And then when my mother came back after about 1950, I think it was 1950 or 51, she brought part of her ashes back to Lodi, my father's ashes back to Lodi. So they're all buried there. In Lodi, they're all home. Then when I went back in 2007, I had the ikotsune dug up, and I had the ohaka-san bunkotsu ni shite, the four little urns, and then we took, because the two were my grandparents. So the Shogyoji-san, the otera no obo-san, and I went to Kyoto. He helped me a lot. He helped me and took me to Kyoto no Ohigashi-san. I'm not Ohigashi, excuse me. Nishihonganji-san, where Shinran Shonin is buried. And we had the ceremony there and had had them put all four urns in the their nokotsudo over there. So it was all taken care of in 2007. I sort of represented the Tamura family because my sister and my brothers told me they're going to leave it up to me to take care of all that, because I have a second cousin who was taking care of the Ohaka, but she's getting older, and she says, you know, she can't take care of it too much anymore, and there's nobody else to watch, look at it, so she wanted to know what we would do. So we discussed it and said, maybe we'll just have to give the Ohaka back to the city. So, sarachi ni shite moratta. So it worked out fine. We're happy with it. Mm-hmm.
But it was must have been difficult for your father.
Oh yeah, my father and my mother. I'm sure, you know, my mother used to tell me, when you lose a husband, well, my father was still living, but later on she said, when you lose your husband, you're of course lonesome, but when you lose a child, she says, naka no mi ga chigireru yona, she says. Somebody's tearing you apart, she says. Yona kimochi ga suru tte. Inside is all torn apart, she says. You'll never get over it, she says. So, and somebody told me, your father died of heartbreak, because he died in 1947, not too long after the war ended, so.
Oh, what was it? Was it some kind of a related to Hibaku,
no, I don't think so, but I really don't know what his actual sickness was. He was, when I came back, see, I got my passage and everything to come back in 47. I did come back in 47 May. I didn't know he was sick until one of my relatives came after me and said, your father's very sick. So I said, well, I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to come. So I went home to visit him. And he got upset with me because at that time we didn't know we could come back or not later on. So he says, I'm already lived my life. He says, I had a good life. You have a real nice mother because she's much younger than me. And she's very nice. And you have a real good mother. And I want you to go to the States and get your high school diploma. And I want you to promise me you get your lipoma. So I said, I promised him. And that's how I left him. And then right after I came back, he passed away. He was real upset with me for coming to visit him. Because he didn't want me to miss the chance of not coming back. So that's what happened. And I still see him, I still see him standing by the shoji no door, looking outside while I left. So, anyway.
And you feel his presence?
Mm-hmm.
You feel his presence?
Oh, I feel everybody's presence. I feel my husband's presence. I feel my mother, father, everybody's presence all the time. I talk to them every day. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So your sister, you were able to come to terms for, it was difficult, it must have been difficult for you to talk about it, to think about
it. For a long time it was, I could talk about it better than looking at any pictures. Because when I used to, when each time I went back to Hiroshima, and when I get on the streetcar, well, this will be in Japanese, but namida ga poro 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 deru when I'm sitting in the streetcar, because I remember passing the rivers and all the people in the river, you know, they just jumped in. So, I mean, I remember that. And it gradually got better. But
so it was what you saw when you were walking?
Oh, yeah, when, yeah, we saw so many of them, you know, jumping in the river and all the people.
Why?
And I saw them because when my father and I searched my sister for 3 days, you see so many. And I saw so many people. The first day, after we came out of the building, all the people running from the center of the city towards our way. And I mean, the burn was just terrible. I mean, they're hanging. The skins were hanging and great big blisters. I mean, it's hard. So I try not to describe it because it's just too hard. It's too painful to say it. You know, it's, but the last time we went to Japan, when I was with the children, we were at the Peace Park, and I was walking, and the namida ga poro 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 comes out. I mean, just walking in the park. So, and when at the reunion when we live, my classmates and we talk, then we all start crying. It's hard to forget things like that. And then one year, when we were at New York, we went to visit the United Nations, and they had the exhibit of the A-bomb pictures, and I couldn't look at it. I had to stop because I started crying. So I didn't tour. So for a long time, I couldn't watch movies of wars. Now I could watch it, but I really don't like it. And it took me 20 years to get used to the sound of the siren. It took me, after I came back, I hear the siren. It took me 20 years. When I first used to hear the siren, I would get nervous and I would get scared. But
like a police siren?
Fire truck, any kind of siren, I used to get scared. It took me about 20 years since I came back.
Why?
It just reminds me of the air raid siren.
Oh, it's very similar?
Well, it's similar siren, you know, any kind of emergency kind of thing.
So now
I could hear it and it doesn't really get me all that not scared, but I really don't like to hear it.
When have you become able to change so that you could talk about it? Was it because of time or?
Well, I think the time. And, well, even right away, I used to talk about it. I could talk about it, but I didn't go into the details about my sister for a long time, just recently, how we found her. I mean, I just said we found her, but I didn't go into the details of how she looked or anything like that because I just couldn't bring myself to say it.
It's only recent, like the last 5 years.
Yeah, about maybe the last even 2 or 3 years.
Wait, was there a time when you were, was there some kind of a event or something that happened that you were able to start to talk about it?
Well, actually the only time that I've been talking, well, I did talk to people when they get curious about it and interested, I would tell them a certain. But instead of talking, I would give them my interview with the reporter just to say you could read this and to let them see that instead of my speaking. But I've been interviewed several times since I don't know how many years that, so I have talked about it, but not really in depth like I told you today about finding my sister and how she looked. So,
and it's something that it's, doesn't...
It will never go away. It will never go away. And as I get older, I think more of it. You reflect in your past a lot. As I get older, I think of my parents more. I think because now my children are grown, the grandchildren are grown, and I don't have to worry about them, so... And my husband passed away. It's going to be 7 years in April. And I'm alone in the evenings usually. Then I start thinking about different things, but I do reflect. But I'm thankful of what I have, and that I'm thankful that I'm able to explain what had happened. My father said, "You tell them what kind of an awful thing that is. That won't happen again." And so I'm just hoping that will never happen again. Yeah, that's one thing that's very scary. Very scary. And to think that the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima was a tiny bomb. Right now, how many times more they have the biggest? And it's so scary to think that some of those third world countries have the capabilities to bomb. It's really scary when you think about it. And I, not for myself as much as for the younger generation, I really feel sorry for them. There's so many things happening in the world. Yeah, so.
Do you think it's important to actually tell these stories?
I think so. I think it's very important to tell. People shouldn't forget. And it's just like even the concentration camp, what they call the concentration camp, you know, where the Niseis, the Japanese people were taken. So people say you should always tell about that too, because some people don't know about it. In America, they didn't, in the history books, they didn't put it out till just recently. So a lot of people didn't know about it. So I think a lot of these things should be taught. Yeah, should be in the educational system, but it's hard to say because everybody has a different opinion, I guess. Yeah.
And do you feel better, or is it to go into that part of the memory? I think it's very, very difficult, and I'm very honored.
Well, it's always there. I mean, you think it's not there, but it's always there because I think subconsciously I always have it, because when I go to, well, in August, of course, we have the Shotsuki Hoyo, the August month, and when we have that, for my sister is August, so when that time comes, I mean, I still cry. It just comes back. You think you have suppressed it, but you haven't. It comes back. It's always there.
But for you to talk about it, is it better, or is it more difficult? Or?
It's like I said, I could talk about it, but it still hurts. Yeah, it still hurts when you talk about it, about what happened, because it's so personal. If I didn't lose my sister, maybe it might be a little bit different. Although I probably would have felt the same way thinking about my friends. But if it hits your home, it makes a lot of difference in how you feel. Yeah.
Well, thank you for telling us. Yeah. I'm very honored.
No, it's
difficult to predict anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, so you came back,
mm-hmm,
by yourself?
Yes. I turned 18 on San Francisco Bay. The ship anchored. It was a SS General Meigs. I guess it was transport ship, like, but it was funny because it was supposed to be first class, but there's about, I don't know, 12 of us in the room. They're all bunk beds, all Niseis, and there was one Hakujin lady who was married to an officer, I think. She was coming home. And so there, most of the Niseis were on there coming back. We were the first ones to come back, the first ship. So it stopped in Honolulu, so my uncle and aunt came out to see me because I was the first one back from Japan. And then came back, and my brother came after me. So then I turned, because we docked. We didn't dock until May 2nd, but we anchored May 1st in San Francisco Bay. So It was.
How did you feel when you first came back?
Hard to say. It was exciting. I was looking forward to seeing my brother, and went home to Lodi, and of course my aunt was there, and she was, because in the meantime my uncle had passed away. So anyway, she was running the boarding house, and that's when I went back. So, but I promised my father that I would get a diploma, so I checked into the school, checked about the school system, and Lodi said I had to go for 3 years to get my diploma. So then I went to Stockton High School for summer, and this one teacher took an interest in me. So she contacted these two sisters called Humbarger, were the last name, and they used to help the Niseis a lot. So she told me to get my report card from Japan. So I had my mother send it, and she gave it to the teacher, and she worked it out. So I just had to go one semester to get my diploma. So after summer school, the teacher that was teaching, actually she was history teacher, and she said for me to come to her class after the summer. And I said, so when I went to Stockton, and I had to take a test, and of course my English was poor, very poor, and I couldn't understand the math. If it was all written in numbers, it wouldn't be too bad, but in English, problem, it was hard to read, and I didn't even understand what fraction was in those days. So then I then passed two grades. So, and when I went to see the counselor, I said, well, Miss Brown wants me in her class, but she's advanced class. I said, but it doesn't matter, she wants me regardless. So she told me, she finally gave me in and let me go into her class. So I did quite well, because at the beginning I didn't understand the test questions in English. So she said, well, ask me and I'll tell you what I mean for you. So towards the end of the semester, because it started in September and graduated in February, and towards the end, she says, you haven't been asking too many questions. I said, well, I'm getting to understand more. So I did quite well in her class and the others. And, well, I'm sort of jumping the gun, but before I came back to the States, I did work for the Shinchugun in Kyoto. My sister was already working there, so she called me and said to come and work there. So I went there to work, and while I was working there, one of my sister's friends, who used to teach shorthand and typing and all that, told me she's going to teach me shorthand. So I said, okay. So I just did it on my own. So when I went to Stockton and I had to take an elective business class, I said, well, I'll take a shorthand. And I told the shorthand teacher, I don't have to take beginner's course because I learned by myself. I know how. And she said, nobody knows how to learn shorthand by yourself. So then I had to take the beginner's course. And then while we were a few weeks into the class, she says, well, you do know, don't you? So I said, yes, I know, and I really didn't need to take this beginner's class. I need the advanced. But I kept stayed in the beginner's class.
What is shorthand?
Shorthand is shoki. Is it shoki?
Shoki.
Shoki. In a signs.
Signs
to,
in the court.
Yeah, well, court. Before it used to be like secretaries used to take, mm-hmm. until the...
But really fast.
Yeah, real fast.
Certain,
huh? Yeah.
Certain
uh-huh.
symbols.
Too. Yeah, symbols, uh-huh.
Not many people use that anymore.
Well, not anymore because of the computer. Mm-hmm. And the court reporter, my Kyoko is a court reporter, so they have the different kind of machine for court reporting. And they have everything is computerized. It's all computerized. So my younger daughter was a court reporter, but ever since the baby was born, she hasn't worked, so she hasn't been back working, but she's a stay-at-home. So,
so So you worked for GHQ. What did you do there in GHQ?
Well, typist.
Just typist.
Yeah. As long as we spoke a little English and did a little typing, they hired. But anyway, I did work there since not too long, few months, and then I came back, left in May, so I came back. Maybe 6 months, maybe, I worked there.
Did they pay you well?
I don't know. I don't even remember because they used to just, I think they used to put it into the banks directly. My parents used to get it, I think, or something. I don't know. I didn't even know what I had. So we did. I can't even remember how much we got paid or what we got paid. I think it was in yen, so.
So you came. You feel like when you came back. Sorry.
No, that's all right. No, that's okay.
What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I mean, so that's when I was taking. I wanted to tell you that shorthand, the teacher. That's where the story sort of got mixed up.
Right. So you were talking about you. Yeah. But when you came back here, you felt like coming back to your home.
Yes. But I did move out because I wanted to get my diploma in Stockton. And in those days, many of the niseis used to work in homes to help. So I did what you call a schoolgirl. And I went to a house where the wife, the last name was Pick, Mr. and Mrs. Pick, and she was in a wheelchair, so she needed help. So I would set the table, wash the dishes or whatever, and then help clean a little bit. And then I went to school and came back. And so it was a walking distance to school from her house. And that's what I did until I finished my... Then after I graduated in February, I went to business school. It's called the Humphreys Business College. And I graduated from there within 9 months. So then I came out. My sister was already back. She had married in Japan. Actually, she married in Japan... wasn't supposed to, but they got married in Japan, and then she remarried again here and lived in San Lorenzo. So I came to live with her after I graduated my business school. And then I went to, from there I went to the employment office because I had already taken my tests. It was 1947, I came back, 48, I graduated. End of 48, I finished business school. And 49, here, I went to the employment office, and there was a long line. And I was very, very bold. I guess I was naive. I said, well, gee, I'm not going to stand in line. So there was an open window, so I walked right straight there. And I said, you know, I already took a test. So maybe I could find a job. So she said, oh, you already took a test. I said, yes. So she took me up right away, and I told her I passed with flying colors. I had good grades. I passed my shorthand for 120 words a minute, and my typing was 85 words a minute. And I mean, everything was really fast. So I said, oh, we have a job for you right away. So they sent me to the 12th Naval District, and it was in San Francisco, actually, the building, the federal building. I went there, and the captain's name was Captain Worth. He was so nice, and he says, oh, you could start right away. And I said, I don't have a place to stay in San Francisco. Said, well, you find a place, and you come back. And like I said, I was so... I guess bold or whatever. I remembered a friend of mine, actually from the Lodi family friend, my brother's friend, and he's married to another family friend. And I remember they lived in San Francisco, so I looked them up in the telephone book, and Eiko Hayashi, that was her name, and I called and said, you don't know me, but I'm Ray Tamura's sister. And I just got a job in San Francisco, but I don't have a place to stay, and I was wondering if you could help me. So she's so very, very nice. So she said to come over. So I went over there, and she put me up, and she took me to this Japanese employment office, and they were, like I said, like a schoolgirl, instead of schoolgirl, working girl. So this very wealthy family up on Pacific Heights in San Francisco needed somebody, so I went there. And she said, okay, you could start, but come in another week or so because we're going to be away on a trip. So I said, I can't because I don't have any place to stay. So she said, okay, you could stay then. Everything worked out fine. So I stayed there while they were gone, and they paid me $25 a month just by setting up the breakfast table and helping with the dishes at night, or serving dinner. Or once in a while they would have parties and I would serve party. Actually, most of the time it was cocktail parties. But they were gone most of the time, so society people, and I didn't have to do too much. They had a cook. I didn't have to do that. They had somebody coming to clean. So I didn't really have to do anything but to go to work. So it was very nice. They worked out very well.
You had your room?
I had a room, private room. Well, servants' quarters, because it was a huge place and overlooking the Golden Gate Bridge. It's one of those, well, it's funny to say condominium, but each floor is owned by somebody. And a huge, huge floor. Each floor is an elevator and has great big library as you go in. I think the library was just as big as this, and the whole living room just overlooking the bay, and I mean had a big dining room with people. I think there were 24 people could sit, 12 on each side, and then a pantry. I mean, I'm exaggerating about the sitting, but it seemed like that to me, and a big pantry. All sterling silver, crystalware, you know, all this kind of stuff. And the big kitchen. And then in the back was the servants' quarter. There were two. One, the cook was a man when I first went, so he didn't stay there. But the second cook was a woman, so we were on both sides of a bathroom. And then long corridor, and they had lots of big bedrooms and master bedrooms and so forth. But yeah, it was a huge, huge society lady, couple.
And so you worked for them and then you got a job?
Yeah, I lived there and then went to work.
And that kept for how long?
Oh, maybe about 1949, 50, 51, 50, about 2 years, about a year, 2 years. Uh-huh.
Did you ever talk about the experience of being in the
a bomb?
Hiroshima?
To them? No, I never did. They never asked, and I never volunteered. Never volunteered. But when, I think it was after the Korean War ended that all the veterans were coming back, so I was bumped from my federal building job, but they had a job in Treasure Island, so that's where I went. But they started showing, they showed the atomic bomb movie one day, and that's when they knew, because I couldn't stand, I ran out, I couldn't watch. But they were showing it to the employees, and I said I couldn't watch it. And they wondered why, so then I told them why.
What was their reaction?
Hmm?
What was their reaction?
I really don't I guess they can't, they couldn't believe that I was in there. Okay? But I guess I don't really remember. I didn't say too much.
Do you remember the first time you talked about it more, a little bit more in detail?
The first time I talked about it was that reporter came. That was the first time in 1948. That was the first time I talked about it. And in between, people have found out about me, so I had gone on the radio with the World's Affairs Council, And I've been to the, I think, Lions Club or some Chamber of Commerce, Commonwealth, I think, or something like that. And I did mention all these things that had happened, but I said, I'm not a speaker, so you have to ask me questions because I am not comfortable just speaking as a speaker. So got by, though.
And what was the people's reaction back then? Because it was, must have been...
I guess they were interested, and I was still young, so it wasn't... I was just hoping that they understood what I was trying to say, but they send out memos and things that they send to me, because I really didn't mingle with the other people, just the person who took me there, you know.
Because a lot of people say that when you say, talk about these experiences, they would say, oh, the Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. Well, they haven't said anything like that to me. Yeah, they haven't said anything like that. Almost everybody said that Truman shouldn't have done it. They said that was wrong. But then I guess we didn't know what, I guess nobody knew what it was, what kind of effect it was going to be either, you know. So, I mean, one thing my father said, well, it ended the war, which is true. It ended the war.
And the, so you were like an American citizen.
Mm-hmm. Well, because in 1941, before the war started, my father heard that it's very dangerous and people with the passport should renew it. So we went to Kobe to renew it. The whole family went to Kobe to renew our passports. So we would have an updated American passport.
But so you were there and the you didn't... but how, what did you feel like knowing that it was your country that... dropped the bomb and did.
Well, you know what? I don't know what. I was so worried about my sister. I mean, that's the only thing that really consumed me and my family, about my sister. Of course, my father, of course, was wondering what's happening. Then he was worried about my brother. But... I didn't really have any animosity in terms of Americans dropping the bomb. I wish they hadn't. But then the other part of it is, too, that I also say the atomic bomb, of course, did such a destruction in one bomb. But I said there's so many people who suffered in Tokyo and Osaka, Nagoya. They never say about that, and I really feel sorry for them, too, because, you know, they really suffered as well. They might not have the same kind of impact, but to me, they should really feel sorry for those people as well. Don't you think so? You know, I feel like every time they talk about... they have publicity about the A-bomb survivors, but there are so many other survivors that I'm sure they have the same kind of feelings inside that they went through that must have been very traumatizing for them.
That would be my almost grandfather's. They've all gone through like a big cities.
I didn't hear you.
Like my grandfather and my grandmother, they all went through
the bombing.
They don't want to talk about that.
Yeah. See, and so I know that we get all the publicity, the atomic bomb people, because of the, well, of course, the impact. But I think they should also publicize the people who suffered from the other types of bombing. You know, it's I always think about them. I do, because I'm sure it's the same thing. It's just in smaller spots. But your grandparents were in Tokyo?
They were in Osaka.
Osaka, yeah, Osaka. Yeah.
So when you came back, so you and then you married to
Jim,
who was a Nikkei?
Yeah, Nikkei. He says he was a Nisei.
So you guys got along. Where did you find each other?
Hiroshima, San Francisco. The Hayashis, the family that he was friends with them too, so that's where we met.
And then you heard the story about the relocation camps from him.
Oh yeah, he used to talk about it all the time. He was in Colorado. He was very, very upset with the American government for putting him in there because they used to live in Petaluma where they used to have an egg farm. He was one of the luckier ones because they owned the land and he was able to rent to a nice tenant while he was gone. And he had a real good friend who took care of, watched over it for him. And he had a new car that he put in the, he had a shed, I guess. I mean, he was telling me all this, that nobody knew his car was in there except for his friend. He had it all boarded up. And then when, after he got, I guess after a while they came out to work, and there were 13 of them went to work in a beet, sugar beet farm. He knew nothing about farming, but just to get out of the camp, he went and he wrote to his friend to bring the car. So he had just married Ernie, had just married and one of Jim's classmates, so they knew each other. So anyway, he drove all the way to Colorado, and it was a black car, black Buick, and the farmer, when Ernie went to ask for Jim Yamaoka, he won't tell him where he is because Hakujin, with a black car, he thought it was an FBI agent, didn't want Jim to get caught doing something. So finally, he called him, and so Jim had his car there, so it made him happy that he was able to drive around.
Your brother was okay? He didn't have to go to
my camp. Brother was in Arkansas, Roar. So they didn't know each other then.
It's another camp.
Yeah, it was Arkansas is down in the south where Clinton comes from, Arkansas.
So it was difficult either if you're on that side or this country too.
Yeah, I think it, yeah, I know. They all was put into camps and it felt so bad for them. But it was all mostly on the West Coast. I think California, Oregon, and Washington. Even Canada had it. Canada had a camp that I didn't know about. No. Yeah.
And even Mexico also.
Yeah, Mexico had
they
it.
They had some camp.
So, yeah, I think Peruvians, were put in.
Peruvians came to Texas.
Yeah, I know. Uh-huh. And they're trying to get some reparation for those people, but they haven't gotten it yet, I think, because they brought them in for exchange or some. I mean, I don't know too much about it, but the Peruvian American, I mean, Japanese Peruvians, I guess. Yeah. So they're trying to get them some money, but I don't think it went through yet. I'm not sure.
What do you think that now? Some Hibakusha, I heard that they asked for an apology from U.S. government.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about that?
For what?
For the atomic crime against humanity.
Oh, I see. Well, I don't know. It, you know, you could ask, and I guess they did apologize about Reagan. The one that signed the, so all the people who were in camp did get money, not as much as some people lost, but nonetheless they did get money. I think $20,000 or something like that each. But like the Koda, have you heard of the Koda Rice family? The one very famous Koda family. Koda Rice is well known. And he had these million-dollar operations, and he went to court to get more, and I think he won because he lost so much money. And we have friends who lost See, Jim was lucky because he owned his property. But some people, but our father, excuse me.
It's okay.
My father couldn't buy property, so he had the property in my brother and my sister's name. So that was okay. But some people who then have children would put it under their nephews or something, and her, some of them sort of weren't very nice, and they took everything away from the people who really owned the property. And so the bad part comes out sometimes in times like that. It's too bad. It's too bad it happens.
And the now that you live in the United States, and then now the United States is the one of the leading countries to have the nuclear weapon, the most number of nuclear weapons.
I know.
As a deterrent, they say.
Well,
they still have the most numbers.
What
do you think of the as somebody that has witnessed?
You know, there's two ways of looking at it, because if we get rid of everything but Iran and China, they all have them, so you don't want that to happen either.
Why? Because they would attack.
Yeah. I mean, so we would have to have some kind of a defense, but I don't know if you need too many or not. That's the thing. I don't know how, because it's getting more sophisticated and sophisticated. And I think that's the one thing that you have to think about, you know. But I would like to see some nuclear energy in some places, because we're running out of the other kind of energy. But it's so scary because of the nuclear one.
Accident.
Yeah, accident. And that's what I'm afraid of.
Chernobyl.
Like Chernobyl. Uh-huh. Japan had a couple of them, but they didn't. It wasn't very serious. But still, you don't know what's going to happen. And especially when there's earthquakes all over and all the
true
natural disasters happen. So you don't know what's going to happen. We just have to keep our fingers crossed, I guess. But like I say, I worry about, no use worrying about it, but I feel sorry for the younger generation. I think they have more to cope. You know, you people you're still young, so there's lots of future ahead of you.
With 30,000 bombs.
I know, there's so many of them now. So, yeah, I feel sorry for my kids and my grandkids and all the younger people. Makes a difference, I think.
What can we do about it?
I don't know. You just have to educate people. But you could educate all you want, but there's always some people have a different kind of point of view, like the North Korean. I mean, people at top are the ones that has to be educated, but they want power, and I think that's where the problem is. They want power, and they want to be the only one. They don't want to give in. Yeah.
Do you still fear a lot of people still sort of have a fear that any time these radiation related, because you can never know what happens?
Well, that's what they say, but so far, well, I have thyroid problem, and they say that could be radiation. I mean, that's one of the things that very common, but also there are people who've never been in the bomb that have thyroid problem. So it's hard to say what's connected and what's not connected, even cancer. You know, to me, I'm sure there's some things that's correct, but on the other hand, it's hard to say, I mean, if it's correct or not. I mean, I could tell the people who's been in testing grounds, those people, you know that it is radiation connected, or those people who had Agent Orange in Vietnam, you know they're connected, and asbestos people. But some of the sicknesses, unless you maybe got it right off the bat or something, I mean, I really can't tell you, because I was sick for about a week afterwards with high fever. For a whole week I was sick. But I didn't lose my hair or anything like a lot of people did. So I was one of the lucky ones. But I had relatives. He died a couple of years ago, but he was really badly burned. And he's a couple of years younger than me. Maybe the same age as my sister. But he was badly burned. He was jiggles, and he came to his grandmother's house and they nursed him. And I remember seeing him. And I mean, yeah, real all burnt all over, and Uji came out. They said they used to eat the rotten skins. It's supposed to be better for you, but you know, kimochi warui. But and then I remember my parents taking cucumbers so they could put cucumbers on the skin and everything. But he lived for a long time, and then but he suffered from cancer. I forgot what cancer it was, but he died 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago. And now his sister, because they lived in Hiroshima, so they were right in there. And the sister, I just talked to her, and she said that she has chogang. So it could be from there. I mean, it's hard to say, because she was right. I guess she was right in Hiroshima, because they lived in Hiroshima.
But you go to the doctor checkup when they come?
Yes, every 2 years they come.
Is it helpful for you? Or?
I think so. They found my thyroid. That's for sure, because I didn't think about telling my doctor how tired I was and how all this, because I thought I'm just tired. But they found, because they do the special tests for thyroid, because I think over here you have to ask for thyroid tests, because it's supposed to be quite expensive, the blood test. So I'm very thankful that they come every 2 years to at least check. And I went to get my techo, I had to go to Japan to get it that 1 year. I think it was 2003 was the first year, because the government does give the kanriteate, you know, and I had to go to Japan to do it. And my kid says, you know, you're lucky you could afford to go to Japan and stay in a hotel for 10 days to get your physical and everything to get the techo. But I said, it's the people who can't afford to go and who are so sick to go, they're the ones who really need it. But I think from 2 years ago, they approved people who then have to go to Japan. They'll do it from the doctors here. And so I think one of my friends who then get her techo in 2003, she just got it. She got it retroactive too, so she was very happy. Yeah.
So now you have the, you said that the memory doesn't go away.
No.
But is there anything you do to tranquilize or to...
Well, like I said, bukkyo dakara. Yappari, I do my meditation, Namu Amida Butsu, and Beshotsuki Hoyo every month for my family, and my sister is August. But it doesn't go. I always remember, think about them, because I have Dobutsu Dang, and so it helps to go to church or to meditate. So.
Does it help? It calms.
It calms me. And then the other thing too in Bukkyo, there's a teaching that says impermanence. And my father always used to say, Inochi no aru mono wa shinuru, katachi no aru mono wa kowareru, jinsei wa kawa no you ni nagare, mainichi kawaru, everything is changing. So when I think of people dying and then I think of impermanence, then it helped me. Naruhodo, it's impermanence. And the other thing is no attachment. You're not supposed to have attachment. No greed. Of course, we're humans, so we all have greed and all that. But I try not to dwell on too many things. It's no use. You have to look ahead. So I guess I'm an optimist, actually, as a whole. And I try not to let things bother me. I mean, I still reflect a lot about the bombing and all the ones who's gone before me, but I thank them for what they gave me. Instead of grieving for them, I thank them. Yeah, because they helped me with my life.
Even after they passed away.
A bigger part?
Even after they passed away different ways.
Yeah, I think about them, but then I said they all had a good life, well, except my sister who died so tragically. But even then, you learn a lesson of different things and what happens, and you never know what life brings. You don't know what tomorrow will bring. You know, I mean, I could be walking down the street and get hit by a car. You can't tell. You don't know what's going to happen. But I always thank everybody for what I have. I'm very thankful for what I have.
Last question is, what is atomic bomb for you or for your life? What does it signify or what... How did it change you, or what is it?
Oh, I don't know. It encompasses a lot of things. Very frightening to think that there's bigger bombs. And I wish it had never happened. And I hope it never happens again. And but it did teach us that we could all, I mean, we don't just lay down and die. I mean, we stand up and start and building the tomorrow. You know, you can't dwell on everything. I mean, you're sad about everything, but you can't dwell on things. You really can't. You have to let some things go and just think of the future and make sure the future is better and that we don't have any more A-bombs.
But maybe you can, another way is, maybe the question is, maybe what is it for you? Like, for what is a place of atomic bomb in a particular event for you in your life?
Well, it's something that happened when I was 16. And like I said, it will never go away. It's always in the back of my mind. And I don't know how to put it, but I guess it's affected my living. I'm sure it has in certain things. Because for a long time I used to have a suitcase filled with warm clothes and shoes for everybody because San Francisco was earthquake prone, and my husband used to laugh. I said, but you don't know when the emergency happens. I said, you have to be prepared. But now I don't do that. But still, you think about things like that a lot. I think of, like I said, it's hard to judge tomorrow. You don't know what's going to happen. And so you just have to be prepared, I guess. And I don't know what A-bomb... I don't know exactly how to explain how I feel about it. It's here all the time. I mean, I don't say about it, talk about it all the time, but it's always in the back of my mind what had happened. And like I say, anytime anything connected to it comes up, pictures or anything, it well makes me very sad, very sad. And I wish it didn't happen and didn't kill my sister. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know how to explain it. I mean, I just don't know how to explain it to you, what it means to me. It's part of my life, actually. It's something that I will never, ever forget. It's never going to go away. It's never going away. So, but I just want my children and my grandchildren to learn, know about it. And they've been to the museums and they've been to Hiroshima. And so they really understand quite a bit. They're very compassionate. Yeah, they're very compassionate. We always make senbazuru when we go take it to the Peace Park. The grandchildren make.
Mm-hmm. All of thousands of them.
Hmm?
Thousand.
A thousand. Mm-hmm. Senbazuru.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we have about three of them hanging. 3 years, I think, we took it. Uh-huh. So that's one thing I would like them to know. I mean, to learn in the world that things like that do happen. Yeah, I guess I want them to know about the tragedies and the bad side of everything. It's not all happiness. Yeah. So.
Thank you very much. Can I take a photograph for a moment?